Thanks to John Holden, Larry Brown, and all of you for your warm welcome here. On behalf of the machinists and the aerospace workers, I am delighted to be in this union hall with people who understand how important it is that we have a strong American labor movement and that we protect the right to organize and bargain collectively for all workers across America. I'm also deeply grateful to two of my friends and former colleagues, two people who represent you with such strength, resolve, and results in Washington. Senator Maria Cantwell, who goes to the mat on every issue that matters to Washington State, never ever gives up. She is tenacious. She is absolutely one of the most effective members of the Senate. I saw that firsthand when we worked together. And Senator Patty Murray, who is one of the most influential senators and leaders in all of Washington on behalf of every issue. Senator Murray gets results. Sometimes when people have all but given up, she never does. And she produces positive change and positive progress for the people she represents here in Washington State. You could not have two better representatives in the United States Senate who go to work every single day fighting for you. And I look forward, if I'm so fortunate enough to be president, to working with them on your behalf, fighting for you and getting positive change across our country. Now, I gotta tell you, I feel especially honored to be here because I was made an honorary machinist some years ago. And so I feel a particular connection here to my brothers and sisters in the Machinists and Aerospace Workers Union and in 751. I want to tell you why I was given that honor and why I was so pleased to accept. It's because I have fought for the rights of working people. I have fought for the right to organize and bargain. I have fought for the middle class. I am no person new to this struggle. I'm not the latest flavor of the month. I've been doing this work day in and day out for years. And you know, I see this presidential election as kind of a giant job interview. Think about it. You're hiring somebody to do all aspects of the job. And each and every one of you have just as much right, just as important a vote as anybody else, to determine who will be our next president. And I want you to understand, as I see the job, because next January, somebody's going to walk into that Oval Office, they're going to sit at that desk, and they're going to start making decisions that affect your lives, your livelihoods, our country. And I think there are three big tests that anybody running for president should have to meet, and whoever's in that office will most certainly have to meet. Number one, can you make a positive difference in the lives of Americans, right? Number two, can you keep us safe and keep America's leadership strong in the world? And number three, can you get our country back coming together instead of dividing, which will undermine our strength, our economy, our position in the world? Now, it won't surprise you to hear me say, I think the first test is the one that people are really focused on for good reason. How do we create more good-paying jobs? How do we get incomes rising again? How do we provide the purpose, the dignity, the meaning of work? And how do we promote and protect the American labor movement? Because to me, that all goes together. So it won't surprise you to hear me say, our economy does better. Our economy does better when we have a Democrat in the White House. And we know that. We have seen that. You know, I'm used to having people yell, so I'm just going to keep talking and let them keep yelling if they want to, because this election is too important for us to be yelling at each other. We ought to be talking to each other and listening to each other. So let me say this. When it comes to jobs and income, we were on the right track in the 1990s. When my husband was president, we had 23 million new jobs. But more than that, we had incomes going up for everybody. Now, some people choose not to remember that, but I remember, because incomes went up not just for folks at the top, went up for middle-class families, working families, even poor families. More folks were lifted out of poverty with a good job than at any time in recent history. That's what we've got to get back to. And you ask yourself, well, what happened? I'll tell you what happened. The Supreme Court chose a Republican president. That's what happened. And we went back to trickle-down economics on steroids. Cut taxes on the wealthy. Get out of the way of the financial markets. Get out of the way of the mortgage markets. And you know the mess we ended up in. The greatest financial crisis since the Great Depression. So when President Obama was elected back in 2008, I want you to put yourself in his shoes. All of a sudden, he's handed this mess he had nothing to do with creating. We were losing 800,000 jobs a month. 9 million Americans lost their jobs. 5 million homes were lost. $13 trillion in family wealth wiped out. And I don't think he gets the credit he deserves for making sure we didn't fall into an even deeper ditch that the Republicans had dug for us. So, I want everybody to pay attention, because you hear the Republicans now. They're like newly found supporters of working people. But don't be deluded here, because every one of their policies would go right back to what failed us before. So here's what we have to do. We have to run an election about the economy, because if we do, we will have a great victory. Because if we expose the failures of their policies, if we talk about the kind of positive agenda I've put forth, then we will win the votes of a majority of Americans who don't want to go back to what they offered the prior 8 years, who know we've got to go further than we are today. The American people need a raise. Most people haven't had a raise in 15 years. And we need more good jobs. You know, that's why I talk about what I'd actually do. You know, some folks just tell you the same thing over and over again. Some folks just say, well, you know, I'll just do it. Right? Well, you know, I have this old-fashioned idea. I'm going to tell you what I'll do, because I want you to hold me accountable for doing it. So we're going to have more infrastructure jobs. It's outrageous that our infrastructure is failing in so many places. Not only what we see, the roads, the bridges, the tunnels, the ports, the airports that all need to be upgraded, but everything we don't see, like the water systems. Right? You all know what happened in Flint, Michigan. Well, that's not the only place where the water system is poisoning people, because some of these are 100, 110, 20 years old. We've got work to do in America. I know we've got some laborers here. They're willing to do that work. They're willing to get started on it. And then we need more advanced manufacturing, like what the machinists do here in Everett and across Washington. You know, some people say, well, we can't make things in America anymore. I just reject that out of hand. And we're going to prove we can. Now, we got to take away the tax incentives that actually give folks benefits for moving jobs overseas. They should be getting benefits for investing in America and creating jobs right here. And there are some tools we have to use to make that happen. I heard both senators talking about the Export-Import Bank. Now, in many parts of the country, that's a kind of, you know, obscure thought. But here in Washington, it's the lifeblood that makes it possible to export from Washington around the world. And it's not only aerospace projects, although it helps enormously with the work that is done here in this state, but it's apple growers. It's Hilliard beer, for goodness sakes, right? So there's a lot of things that are made right here in Washington that are supported by the Export-Import Bank. $86 billion worth of goods and services exported last year in Washington. Republicans tried to kill it. And you know, I went to 112 countries as your Secretary of State, and I can tell you that our major competitors around the world, they do everything they can to support their exporters. They are subsidizing, they are guaranteeing, they are engaging in what I believe is unfair competition, but they're standing there fighting for the people that they have in their countries making goods and exporting services. I'm going to be the biggest champion of the Export-Import Bank because it doesn't cost us a penny, but it enables us to sell around the world. And I want to do more, not less of that. And so when the Republicans, led by the Tea Party, when my opponent, Senator Sanders, joined arms against the Export-Import Bank, I just shook my head. You know, we are not living in a world where we are alone. Sometimes I wish we were, but we're not. So we got to deal with the competitors that are out there. And I want us to compete and win. That is my goal as your president. And we've got to get back to supporting and growing the middle class. And we cannot do that unless we support unions and the work that unions do to increase the pay, the benefits of people. And make no mistake about it, we are in a very tough political fight because a lot of employers and a lot of their ideological supporters, like the Koch brothers, they want to destroy the American labor movement. I see it every day. You live it every day, right? So I'm going to have the toughest enforcement of the labor laws on the books. I'm going to look for every chance I can to support by using the presidential bully pulpit, the right to organize. I'm going to look for ways that we can level that playing field even among states in our own country. You know, John and Larry and I were talking about that earlier. I don't want to race to the bottom anywhere in America. And when some states basically say, hey, we will do everything we can to shut down unions, prevent unions, that's part of a race to the bottom. Nobody deserves that. So in addition to making sure we protect the right to unionize and the right to all benefits, including retirement security, among those who are already members of unions or retired members, we've got to help other people in our country from being driven into poverty when they're working a full-time job. Because that's what's going on in too many places as governors and legislatures try to provide all these inducements to people. So manufacturing is high on my priority list, and we're going to do everything we can to create more manufacturing jobs and to keep manufacturing jobs here. And I want to say a word. When I was the senator from New York, you know, New York had a lot of great manufacturing centers that got hammered, you know, starting in the 50s and the 60s and continuing on from there. A lot of jobs left, and they didn't go to another country. They went to another state, mostly in the southern part of the United States. Took those jobs, took those plants, took all of that opportunity with them. But we still have some great, great companies in New York. And I know how important it is to have a president who understands how to stand up for American companies around the world. I stood up for New York companies. I stood up for a great company called Corning. You know, Corning is still in upstate New York, been there 125, 30 years, longer maybe. And they were doing business in China. And the Chinese basically said to them, you know what, if you want to keep doing business, you have to share your intellectual property with another company or we're going to slap big tariffs on you. You know what they're trying to do. They're trying to reverse engineer fiber optics, Gorilla Glass, all the things that Corning has invented. So I went to bat for them, and we were able to push them back and keep the intellectual property. But this goes on every day. And I fought against the Chinese as Secretary of State on behalf of American companies. As president, I'll have even more opportunity and power to fight back on behalf of American companies and to make it clear that the first priority of any American company has to be good jobs in America, not somewhere else. And that means we've got to make sure we enforce every trade deal we've got and we don't enter into any more that might disadvantage us. And that is exactly the position I've had for a long time. So we're going to fight for American jobs, we're going to fight for American workers, and we're going to grow manufacturing. At the same time, I think the best way to fight climate change is to create more clean, renewable energy jobs. They can't be exported. They have to be done in the United States. When you talk about wind and solar and geothermal and even clean nuclear, all of the potential that we have to try to reverse climate change, to try to fulfill our obligations under the global agreement that we entered into, these are good jobs, and these are jobs that have to be done right here in our country. So I have a full agenda for what we can do together, and I want to be your partner. I also think it's important we support small businesses. They produce two-thirds of the job. There are a lot of folks who want to start a small business. A lot of young people want to start small businesses, and those small businesses can grow over time given the right support. I also want to raise the minimum wage, and I support the effort here in Washington State to do that. There is no evidence that the minimum wage being increased costs jobs. So I'm supporting what you're trying to do here, and I want to raise it across the country. And the other thing we're finally going to get done is equal pay for women's work. You know, people don't talk about it a lot, but that's not just a women's issue. That's a family issue. You know, women who aren't getting paid equally are cheating their whole family. It's also an economic, and you've got five daughters, so you know you've got a stake in this. You know, it's interesting because when I look at where people are paid equally, it's you know, government, military, and unionized contracts where people can see what they're being paid. And they can compare it. But in the rest of the American workforce, you don't even know what somebody's being paid. You know, Lilly Ledbetter, you may have heard of her. She was on the floor of a factory, non-unionized, in Alabama for years. She got promoted to be a supervisor, only woman. She worked really hard, got great reviews, did not know for years that she was never paid the same as her male supervisors. You know, a lot of it is just old-fashioned views about this. But at some point, if you are working a job, you should get paid fairly and equally for that job. That should be part of the American workforce without any questions anymore. Let me just quickly say that I think education and health care go hand in hand with our economy. You bargain for good benefits with health care. We want everybody to have access to quality, affordable health care. It's something that I have fought for. You know, before it was called Obamacare, it was called Hillary Care. I took on the insurance companies. I took on the drug companies. And I'm going to keep doing that. We're going to get to 100% universal coverage based on the Affordable Care Act, and we're going to get the cost down, the out-of-pocket costs, the co-pays, the deductibles, and we're going to take on the high price of prescription drugs. We're going to get that down as well. And I want to say a special word about education. You know, every child deserves a good teacher in a good school, regardless of where that child lives, what that zip code of that child's home might be. I think we need to start with early childhood education because I want to lift every kid up. Every kid deserves to go as far as his or her hard work and talent will take them. I want to be a good partner to our teachers because they deserve our support. They don't deserve to be scapegoated and blamed for everything. And I want to do more on technical education and skills training. I have a proposal so that we could work between employers and unions for more apprenticeship programs, so more young people will be attracted to the trades to become skilled workers. There will be over 1 million jobs for welders and carpenters and machinists and plumbers and electricians, but we don't have enough people in the pipeline. And these are good jobs by and large. So let's get back to encouraging young people to get those skills, because those are honorable skills and they should be respected. And we need to do more in high school and community college and apprenticeship programs to help more young people, more mid-career people be able to get those jobs. And we're going to make college affordable again. I want to make community college free, and I want to make tuition for four-year public colleges and universities debt-free, so you don't have to borrow money. Now, I have a difference with my friend Senator Sanders. He talks about free college for everybody. I believe the better approach is to have debt-free tuition for middle-class, working families, and poor kids, because if you give it free to everybody, you and I are going to end up paying to send Donald Trump's kid free to college or university. I'm not doing that. I'm not asking you to do that. So we can make it affordable, which we will do, and then we're going to give everybody with student debt the chance to pay it down, to get a lower interest rate, to be able to move into a program to pay it back as a percentage of their income. I did that when I went to law school. I borrowed money. I worked. I didn't get any help from anybody. And when I got out, I wanted to take a job at an organization called the Children's Defense Fund. And the only way that I could have paid my debt was to be in a program where I paid it off as a percentage of my income, because I made about, I don't know, $14,000 a year. That worked. Right now, we are penalizing our young people. We are putting them under absolutely unforgivable pressure. And a lot of them don't feel like they can get on with their lives. Well, when I'm president, we're going to get that debt under control. We're going to get it down, and we're going to tell people there is an end date. You will not have to pay back your debt after a certain period of time if you've paid back every month. Now, the second big test is, can you keep us safe? And can you maintain our leadership around the world? Well, we were reminded again this morning, weren't we, about how important it is to have a steady, smart, strong approach toward keeping us safe. That is exactly what I believe we have to do. And I've laid out a very specific agenda for defeating ISIS, not just on the battlefield in Syria and Iraq, using Arab and Kurdish forces, not American forces, using American air power in order to deprive them of territory, to basically cut them off from being able to run their nefarious terrorist network out of Raqqa, Syria. But I also know we've got to stop the flow of foreign fighters and foreign money and arms. And here's something else we've got to do. We've got to defeat them online. You know, that is where they radicalize, and that's where they propagandize. And, you know, I did some early morning TV today talking about this, because I think it's a serious issue. The United States has to offer whatever help we can to Belgium and the other European countries, but we have to work closely together with our friends and our allies, and we have to form coalitions of nations willing to defeat ISIS with us. And so when I think about what we have to do, I see the challenge ahead as one where we're bringing the world together, where we are leading the world against these terrorist networks. Whereas some of my opponents want to build walls and shut the world off. Well, you tell me, how high does the wall have to be to keep the internet out? Right? You know, that's not the world we live in any longer. We got to take them on the internet. We need our great tech companies to be helping us do this. We have to shut their sites down. We have to intervene where we can to prevent radicalization of homegrown terrorism. And we need everybody on the front lines, everybody, particularly, I will add, American Muslims, because they're the ones who should be calling the FBI and law enforcement to say something suspicious is going on. I want them to feel like they are part of our defense, not that they're being insulted and isolated and left out, which will be dangerous to us. That doesn't make sense, my friends. And you know, the final test, and this is a big one, because we have a lot of divisions in our country right now. And we are stronger when we are pulling together. I saw this after the horrible attack of 9/11 when I was representing New York. I mean, everybody could have been pointing fingers and placing blame and running from responsibility, but that's not what happened. Everybody came together, and we all worked together, and we all did our best to protect not only New York, but the rest of America going forward. I want us to come together as a nation again. That doesn't mean we're not going to have differences. You know, we're going to have differences on organizing, right? On getting your benefits and getting the right support for your workforce. We're going to have differences on the best way to take on the prescription drug companies. We're going to have differences. But I will do whatever I can to find common ground for our country, to unite us around the big challenges we face. You know, I said the other day, I know a lot of people are angry, they're frustrated, and a lot of people, especially after what happened in Brussels, are afraid. But I think leadership isn't about fanning those fears and that anger. Leadership is saying, look, we can do this together. Remember Franklin Roosevelt? The only thing we have to fear is fear itself. Because if we're in a state of fear, we turn on each other. Man, we got too much work to do to be doing that. We got to stand up for America, stand up for our values, stand up for our future, do everything we can to make sure that our kids and our grandkids have the best opportunities that they deserve to have as Americans. That's what I will do as your president. So I will go anywhere, anytime to speak with anyone about finding common ground, but I will also stand my ground because there are a lot of issues that I will not budge on, that I know are important to the quality of life, to the income, to the future of the American people. Now, I can't do any of this without your help. We have a caucus on Saturday, and I hope that you will turn out, and I would be honored to have your support. And I will tell you this. Right now, look, I totally respect the passion of my opponent's supporters. Absolutely respect it. But here's what I want you to know. I have, as of now, gotten more votes than anybody else, including Donald Trump. I have gotten 2.6 million more votes than Bernie Sanders. I have a bigger lead in pledged delegates, the ones you win from people voting, than Barack Obama had at this time in 2008. So, we are on the path to the nomination, and I want Washington to be part of how we get there. I know that a caucus is a kind of unusual experience. It's not like showing up and voting and going about your day. You know, you show up and you're not quite sure what else is going to happen. And some states that have caucuses, my goodness, it's like, you know, you're asked to recite your entire life story before you get to express an opinion. I know it's different in different places. But it's important to show up at this caucus on Saturday. Because here's what gets me up in the morning. I have an amazing granddaughter.
It is now requiring approval of any official travel.
Those of you in the crowd who are at this stage in your life being a grandparent, really, isn't it the most amazing experience? And here's what I want. Look, I want, my husband wants everything we can do to give that little girl every opportunity in life. That's what you want for your kids and your grandkids. But that is not enough. What kind of country is she going to grow up in? What kind of world is out there? How safe will it be? That's why the United States and we Americans, we have to pull together. We have to restore economic prosperity, rebuild the American middle class, and we have to stand up to all of the problems and the dangers in the rest of the world. We do it because that's who we are, and we do it for our children and our grandchildren because we want them to have every opportunity to go as far as their hard work and talent will take them, to have the chance to fulfill their own God-given potential. That's what I'm fighting for. With your help, that's what I will do every single day if I'm so fortunate as to be your next president. Thank you all very, very much. And thanks to the Machinists for having us. Thank you.